All right, welcome in, Jaguars. Today on this Tuesday, Mike Dempsey, David Garrard. Last time we're going to see you for a while, right?
Well, I plan on being here next Tuesday.
Is it next Tuesday? You're still stretching out one more week.
One more week. All right. Out of town this weekend for my camp in Durham, North Carolina, but then I come right back in town.
How did the fishing tournament go for you?
It was great. We raised a ton of money for charity. The fishing part was not so great.
No.
We went out deep and we brought in one fish, one dolphin. Mahi-mahi, people that's a little confused with that. We had a fun time. Day on the water is always a great day.
Because the dolphins are so cute and they're intelligent.
Yeah, we're not catching porpoises.
Unless we call them mahi-mahi.
Yeah.
then it's all good.
Yeah.
Delicious lunch is what we call that. How big was it, the one you
caught? It was about 18 pounds. So it was kind of a medium size, though. The winner was a 34-pounder.
34, and was in that category, the mahi? Is there
yes.
a mahi category of the
well, offshore fish sport fish,
I
yes.
gotcha.
That wahoo
all right, 34-pounder, but not the best. A great day, as you said, to raise money
yeah.
for the foundation.
Our party that night was a lot of fun. We had
good.
A great time.
Good stuff. I couldn't miss you walking in today, man.
Yeah.
He kind of glows.
He went off the superhero line of clothing, and you
went neon.
You went very day glow on us today. We're not gonna have any trouble picking you out. Tweet him out, Tony, because no one is going to have any trouble picking David Garrard up. You're going up now. Give me the summer plans. I know you'll be back next Tuesday, but over the next week and beyond that, what do you
yeah,
have coming up?
Yeah, so going up to Durham for my football camp. Then me and my son, we're going to fly back. We're going to help the girls, my wife and my two girls. We're going to all drive up in the RV, so I can't let them just drive up by themselves. So we're going to help them up there to the lake house. And from there, we're going to start pre-sales with our gym here in town. So I'll have to come back every once in a while to make sure that's all running smoothly. And, you know, pretty much just fun on the lake.
All right, we'll put you on the shelf for a few months, get you ready for training
yeah,
camp.
Yeah, please.
And come back. You look at training camp or OTAs right now, is we may not see Allen Robinson again till training camp. You know, you got a couple more weeks of OTAs. He tweaked his hamstring last week, and they're going to be very careful with him.
The dreaded tweaked hamstring.
Right? I mean, it's one of those, I guess lots of injuries can linger if you don't get through them, but it
yes.
seems like the hamstring injury is one that has been around forever, that if you don't treat that thing just so, you risk re-aggravating it seemingly more than others.
It is, and I did it my second year. It was OTAs. It was the last week of OTAs, and we had like two more practices, and then we had our summer break. And so they told me that you have to just take this pretty much the next 3 weeks and just let it rest. You have to ice it. You have to, you know, put a little warm compress on it. But you can't do anything too strenuous because it will just continue to linger on, and you don't want it to linger on into training camp. So hopefully Allen Smart, he is a young man, so he's going to want to get back faster and try to prove to everybody he's okay. But it is that one injury that you have to let rest.
And your body, when you're that age, you feel like, it feels pretty good
exactly.
today, right?
Yeah.
I can go out there.
You go out there a week early, and it's almost healed, but it's not completely healed, and it just stretches again, and now you're just
another
back
month on
yeah,
top
exactly.
or whatever the case.
Exactly.
How big of a deal is it, though? Marquise Lee is dealing with a bit of an ankle. They said after practice yesterday that he originally aggravated last week, although I don't remember that coming up as an issue after practice. But regardless, it seems like Allen Robinson will miss a little bit more time. Marquise is day-to-day, not a big deal. But, you know, you got a guy like that, two second-round picks. We talked about them a lot, Dave, in terms of they can be hopefully counted on to make an immediate impact for this football team. How far does that put you behind as a rookie wide receiver working out the chemistry with a guy like Chad Henne?
Well, it definitely puts you behind. But with training camp coming up, you still have plenty of time to be able to get that groove with Chad. With an ankle, it's not nearly as bad. You can still stand out there and do some slow jog stuff, you know, as long as you're not, you know, putting too much pressure and too much stress on that ankle. Ankle, you can come back from a little bit easier. So he'll still be out there. He'll still be listening. He'll still be hearing. He'll still be, you know, doing slow jogs for Chad, for the coaches, that kind of stuff. But you definitely don't want to go into training camp with these things lingering around. You want to make sure that you attack them now and get them done before training camp rolls up, because that's when you got to be ready to go. Because as soon as you hit training camp, it's basically the start of the season, and you're rolling right through training camp right into the start of the season.
Yeah, you're getting in that mode, getting ready to play week one. I would think, you know, we've heard guys, if they've been playing for a while, sometimes it's okay if you're hurt or for whatever reason to take a seat on the sideline to watch and observe from a different vantage point, whatever the sport is. And sometimes it kind of slows things down for you a little bit in your mind. But he's yet to play for this football team. So it's
different when you're a rookie,
right?
Yeah. You don't know what's slowing down. You don't know what's fast because you haven't done it before as a pro. And so that works for older guys, but when you're a rookie, you're seeing things and you're thinking, oh, wow, I wonder if I can do that. I wonder if this is what it takes to do that. I don't know. So you're really kind of chomping at the bit to get back out there. It's totally different than a veteran sitting on the sideline. But he will be coached the whole time. They will not let those guys go by without hearing something, without, you know, having them at least imagining it in their mind, those kind of things. But the best thing is to be on the field. If you can be counted on, if you can be the guy that's out there producing, playing, staying out of the tub, if you will, staying out of the training room, then that's going to be better for you and for the guys around you.
We'll hear coming up some of the comments after practice from Gus Bradley yesterday and Chris Clemens back in town or in town now to begin his OTAs with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Whatever issue he was dealing with apparently resolved, but he's back in to the mix. So we'll hear those thoughts and get your thoughts coming up as well. Something I wanted to talk about with you last week, but we didn't get a chance to get to. You've been in the circumstance where some of your teammates have trained away from the team in the past. So we'll talk about, you know, whether that's important. Does it matter? You know, obviously, who we're talking about, you know, and what level they've reached and what position they may play and how that whole thing fits in. Also today, Marcus Pollard is going to join us, a longtime nemesis of yours and the Jaguars with the Indianapolis Colts, now the director of player development for the Jags. And the Jags have a big coaching clinic next Wednesday for high school coaches in the area to come out. I think it's phenomenal, really, to, as a high school coach, to be able to get 6 hours of instruction, basically, from the late morning deep into the afternoon. Practically every coach on the Jags staff is going to participate in this. They're going to talk about philosophy, you know, drills. The whole lineup is all spread out. Gus Bradley is going to give a talk to these guys. I mean, what a resource as a high school coach to be able to get that kind of instruction.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of your high school coaches, you know, didn't make it past high school playing football, or maybe they didn't even play football
right
in high school. So this is going to be great. It's going to be invaluable for them because they're going to hear things that they've never heard before. They're going to hear ways to do things that they never thought possible because these guys live and breathe football. And how are ways to make our players better? What are ways to get the most out of our talent? And that's something that a lot of high school coaches don't really have. Only the really great ones have, and that's only a few that are really out there. So without coming to things like this, your knowledge is basically YouTube. I've actually heard of coaches going on YouTube and figuring out things, different coaching strategies, because everybody's putting things on YouTube. But that's not a way that you want to.
Right. What's good? what's proven?
Yeah,
what's time
exactly
tested? It's kind of hard to
then
tell.
Then hopefully they'll be able to interact with them. They'll be able to ask questions. I've thought about doing things this way for my team or for certain players. What do you guys think about this? And then they can have, you know, one of the coaches answer back to them. Or maybe it's a position that they want to talk about and how you can, you know, get more out of that position. And so I think it would be great for high school coaches to be able to come in and talk to NFL coaches.
Yeah, it's going
to
be phenomenal. And another great thing for the fans, on Thursday, once again, OTAs will be open for fans to come out on Thursday. And people have been asking about the time. There is a time change. It's 10:50 to 12:50 this Thursday. So, you know, obviously a lot of people are going to have to work. It's a Thursday morning. It'll be interesting after such a turnout for the rookie minicamp. Of course, that was Friday. Maybe people kind of called it at a half day on Friday, and then they came out in record numbers on that Saturday. It'll be interesting to see how many folks, but it is open to the public if you want to come out. I believe you do need to go to Jaguars.com. They ask you to pre-register there, but it doesn't cost anything to get in. It makes it quicker for you if you pre-register getting in to observe practice. Get out here early, 10:50. They'll be on the field stretching, warming up, going through 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s, all that good stuff on Thursday morning. So take advantage of that. Coming up today as well, in addition to Marcus Pollard, Tony yesterday after practice caught up with both Toby Gerhart. You may have heard that last night on the Fat Tony Show. And Josh Evans, right now, sidelined for the Jags. And we'll talk, we'll hear from both of those guys coming up throughout the course of the show. And Gus Bradley set to join us a little later on this week as well. So full day for you. Jaguars today just getting underway. 6-4-1, 10-10. Only a couple more weeks with David Garrard before he goes on an extended summer vacation. So take advantage. Get on board. 6-4-1, 10-10. We'll throw out all the Twitter and Facebook handles coming up for you, and we'll give you the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. When we return, just getting started, Jaguars Today live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Because sports are supposed to be fun, this is 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This is my brother-in-law, Barry, my wife's brother, and his two cousins and a close friend. He's on bass. His cousin is lead singer. His other, the cousin's brother is on the drums, and their childhood friend is on guitar.
And this band is called Parmalee.
Parmalee. This song right here was number one in the country.
Back
really? In January, yes. For about three weeks.
Certainly not me. Garrard came in today, Tony. Goes, we're going to switch it up. I'm going country.
Switching
today.
It all up, baby.
I'm going country. Like, what happened to you, man? All right, now you got a familial connection to the whole story. That's good
stuff. I know somebody famous.
Number one in the whole country, though. That's top of the charts, I believe, is what they call that.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic stuff. We hope that Gus Bradley gets the Jags to that point. Going to hear from Gus what he had to say yesterday after practice. We're hoping he's going to pop in with us tomorrow. To talk. I know he's excited about the coaching clinic that we mentioned coming up next week, among other things, what's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But started off yesterday by characterizing how he felt day four of OTAs went.
It was a good learning opportunity. I don't think our tempo is as good as we need it. You know, we pointed that out in practice, but, you know, we still got a lot of situational work in, and we learned from the situation that came up out there. You know, overall, good day, but great learning day for us.
Yeah, Gus got a little agitated yesterday for the first time that we've seen him. Now, look, we've seen Gus on the sidelines get agitated at players, at referees, what have you. In fact, when the Jags were first looking at signing him, and in the initial days after signing him, that clip of him screaming, do your job, on the sidelines, you know, kind of made the rounds here, and it's still a popular expression. But you forget, because at least I do, we see him every day, Dave. He's generally so jovial. He's in such a good mood. Coaches, how much of that has to happen? I mean, no matter how much you get along with your coach, Rex Ryan, you said, was a great guy to play for. How much does he need to just lose it every once in a while? I mean, just out of necessity.
All coaches are going to lose it. Like Rex Ryan, great coach. You could talk with him. You could joke with him. He was like a teammate in the locker room. But when he had to lose it, he did. Jack was the same way. Tom could lose it quite often. So every coach has to have that in them, because guys are not living up to their potential. Guys are not playing up to their abilities. And if you have that multiple days in a row, it eats at you. And as a coach, you have to do something about it right now. You can't let it continue on. You can't let guys see that you're just okay with it, because then they're going to be just okay with it. So when you lose it, you get everybody's attention. You can't lose it all the time, because now guys are going to just start, you know, oh, there he goes again, you know.
Right. That's a fine line, I would imagine.
Exactly.
How many times can you push that button until it's like, this is his coach. I mean, this is how
exactly.
he is every day, and it kind of loses.
But when you do lose it, and you do it, you time it out perfectly when you do it, you get everybody's attention, and everybody starts to, you know, check themselves and kick it up a notch.
Gus was asked what was missing from practice. What was it that prompted that, we'll call it a discussion during
yesterday's
practice?
You know, we talk in terms of get better and what it should look like, and I just felt like watching all phases of it and how we are executing, that's not what get better looked like. And I wanted to point that out to the guys so they feel it. I told them it's our team, but it's their responsibility to step everybody up when they feel that. And they did after that. I think they sensed it. And I just want to give them ownership that when they sense that, to really take over.
Yeah, it's funny. Chris Clemens and Red Bryan, obviously, know Gus, and several other guys have as well that have come down to Seattle South. A lot of people want to call it whatever you want to say. And Clemens was asked about this. How did this compare to some other times you've seen Gus kind of lose his cool a little bit, blow his stack, whatever you want to say? This is what he had to say about Gus's tirade yesterday.
I mean, I've seen worse. I mean, that was a light day, you know, coming out of him. So, I mean, I've seen worse. I mean, I've been on the end of one of those. So, I mean, it was one of those things that you just, you know, you see and you like, okay, I understand that, and you know, you keep it moving.
And that's, I would imagine, that's part of it. You've had to have been chewed out by coaches from every level that get in your face. And coaches, I would assume, need to learn how each individual player responds to them. Or are there coaches that just say, look, you're either going to respond to what I do or you're not going to play for me?
Yeah, most coaches, like I said, lose it. You do have to understand different players, different positions. Some positions you can't lose it in front of everybody as much. Like the quarterback.
Like the quarterback,
position.
Right.
Yeah, quarterback position, you're going to do it, especially when you have a quarterback that can handle it. You know a quarterback can handle it, and you know he needs it every once in a while.
But you've got to project leadership to the rest of the team. He can't be dressing you down too far.
Exactly. But you still have to do it because you have to show that you're the coach and you're in charge of everybody. If you give any of the players a little bit more of a pass where you never yell at them, even though everybody knows they were in the wrong, then they're going to be looked at as, you know, this guy has more power than the coach, because the coach is afraid to get on him. So every player needs to be yelled at. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, they all have to be yelled at some point. But you can't continue to yell at those guys day in, day out like you can your D-line, your linebackers. And a lot of times they're yelling at them just to keep them motivated and fired up. You know, they're not yelling at them like dogs or saying, you're terrible, you disgust me, that kind of stuff. But when they make a mistake, they need to hear it because they're already yelling at themselves for doing it. They want to hear their coach say it. I was told this a long time ago. If I'm talking to you, if I'm yelling at you, that means I care. If I'm not saying anything to you, that means I've moved on and I don't care about you anymore.
Right. Good point, because I still think there's something that you can do better than what you're doing and you can help this football team.
You remember last year, Mike? I mean, Andre Branch had the offside that cost the Jaguars an opportunity to get off the field. He's coming off the field. It was a completely boneheaded play.
Right.
The fans were ready to watch Gus Bradley just completely rip into him because they were frustrated with Andre Branch. And Gus instead put his arm around his shoulder and had a conversation with the guy on the sideline about what had just happened, that it can't happen again. And we took calls for 3 hours from people saying, why didn't he tear him open for what he just did on the field? And we both said it. Maybe Andre Branch doesn't respond to getting torn open. Maybe he needed somebody to tell him, look, this can't happen. If it happens again, you're not going to be on the field for me anymore. And he responded later in that game and later in the season to what Gus Bradley was doing teaching him. But everybody has something different they need.
Yeah, I would think so, too. And I would think as a head coach, too, you hear Chris Clemens' response to that. He just kind of laughs like, are you kidding me? I've seen a lot worse out of Gus Bradley. I would think as a coordinator, I remember when they hired Del Rio here and the video of him, what was he, jumping on Julius Peppers' back in that game? Remember that? He was so fired up running out on the field. And it's like, that's not, you're going to get that, but you can't have that all the time if you're the head coach. And I think you have to consciously dial it down, don't you?
You do. You have to have a fine line between it all. You know, you can't be so buddy-buddy with everybody that they forget you are the head coach and they treat you just like a buddy. Because then when you lose it on them, they're not going to have that same respect for you because I thought we were boys, you know, and now here you are yelling at me. So you can't do it but for so much. But then, and also you can't yell at guys just constantly because guys are going to start tuning you out after a while. And you don't want them to tune you out. So you never know with that situation with Branch, I believe you said it was.
It was.
You never know what happened during the week that he may have been doing that same thing or may have had some issues, and coach was telling him, maybe coach lost it on him during the week at practice and then got in the game and saw the same thing. So he said, okay, you know what? I'm not going to jump on this kid again because I might put him into the hole, in a hole. So let me just love on him. Let me just talk to him. Let me talk to him like a man and say, hey, we need you. We're counting on you. You can't make that mistake. You already made it once this week. Now you just made it in the game, whatever it is. put it behind you. Let's move on. Go make plays. So sometimes that's what happens, and fans don't know that. Fans just see a bonehead play and the coach not jump them, you know, and so there's more dynamics going on behind the scenes than we all know.
Yeah, it doesn't just happen what you're seeing on Sunday afternoon. Speaking of Clemens, Gus Bradley asked yesterday how Chris Clemens looked. Did he look like he was in tip-top shape?
It looked like it, and I'll see more on tape and stuff, but I know he got in there in some of the no huddle and the third downs and our final or second last period, Code Black. So, you know, we'll see how he looked, but he seemed to be doing pretty good.
Code Black, Tony, is that a new one I need to learn now?
He's got one for everybody.
He's got something. I mean, last week we learned all about vision. We've got a vision for you. We want you to acknowledge and accept the vision, create a plan to build towards that vision. And now Code Black is the newest thing in there. Clemens, by the way, asked about his mindset. He comes from a Super Bowl champ here to a team that is struggling for relevancy. And does that change the way you approach things?
Mindset don't change. You know, you want to bring that winning tradition here. And, you know, Jacksonville is long overdue, you know, so it's a group of young guys. And you always want to raise them and watch them grow as you allow the team, as you watch the team grow. So, you know, Gus being a young head coach, you know, a lot of the guys being young players, and myself and Red being veteran players, you know, it's an easy process. And at the same time, getting them to understand how to play the game.
You know, with Clemens, Dave, he missed a couple of days of OTAs. It's not a big deal. It's such a young team. Most of these guys, it's not like he's been around and then left. So he's back now. I think they anticipate him being here through the remainder of organized team activities. But you played with guys, Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, that did their own thing in the offseason. How was that received? Did people just say, hey, we know those guys are going to show up and they know how to get themselves ready? And obviously I would assume it's different depending on your stature within the organization and what you've accomplished already in your career.
Yeah, there's a few things. You know, first of all, position. Quarterback has to be there. Quarterback runs everything. Everybody feeds off the quarterback. He initiates everything. So you got to be there. But then when you get to other positions, it's not quite the same. Quarterback needs his receivers there. He doesn't necessarily need his running backs there because you just turn around and hand the ball off.
That handoff's the same.
Yeah,
regardless,
you know, maybe some routes that they run out of the backfield, but it's always still the same kind of basic routes. So you don't really need them there unless they're one of the leaders on the team. Then now that kind of is a touchy situation, but you still don't really need them there. D linemen, you definitely don't need them there. But you want these guys to be there because you want everybody else, especially when you're new like Clemens, you want everybody else to know, how do you work? How do you get things done? What's your mindset? What do you do on the field that helped your team last year win the Super Bowl? So everybody wants to see that, and you're new. So we want to see how we mesh on the D-line. You know, how are you stunting? How do you close down on gaps and penetrate and all those different things? We want to see those things because we've never seen them before from you. We can watch film, but that's not the same as being on the field. How do you talk to guys on the field? A lot of little things that can all be accomplished in training camp, but you still want those guys to be there, especially when they are new. Now, if you've been a guy that's been on the team for a while now, like a Mercedes Lewis, somebody like that, it's okay if you miss some time because we know how you operate. We know you as a player. We know you as a teammate, that kind of stuff. But when you're new, we want to get a feel for you, and then we can go from there.
So, I mean, and look, missing some time, if you've got a wedding or something to go to, I think that's not that big of a deal. And I'm sure those kind of situations will come up with every team this offseason and all the voluntary stuff. But, you know, Fred Taylor said, hey, I can better prepare myself by not being here. I'm going to separate myself from the team. I'm not saying he did it to separate himself from the team, but that was an end result of him training down in South Florida. Maurice Jones-Drew followed that example. It was hard to argue with the results, the early years. Now, Maurice had some injury-plagued years. I don't think that was anything due specifically to training anywhere. But was there ever, for those guys, these weren't always years when the team was winning big. Was there resentment in the locker room?
Never. Fred Taylor, who was going to resent Fred Taylor?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
No, never. Mojo, nobody would resent Mojo. Because when he was here, he was always a beast. He was always working hard. He always knew his stuff. He never came back and everybody was like, well, who is this guy? He's not prepared, you know, out of shape, can't run. I thought he was training somewhere trying to be better, and it was better for him. So some of those kind of guys like that, those kind of top-end athletes that are geared for speed and power and those kind of things, yes, they can go somewhere else and specifically work on that day in and day out, not have to worry about the grind of OTA practices, have to worry about going home and they're dealing with their kids and all the things of off-the-field type things. When they go away, a lot of times, they do go away, and they're just focusing on training, on healthy eating, all those kind of things, where when they're here, there's a lot of distractions from being able to focus on that stuff, and especially during OTAs when it's just a learning time. You're really just kind of getting familiar with the playbook and your teammates, that kind of stuff. It's not like training camp where these plays count, these plays matter. We're trying to build towards the start of the season. So nobody resented them. Nobody, you know, had any kind of ill will towards those guys. We all thought, man, these guys, when they come back, they always come back looking so good. Some of the other guys are thinking, I need to go figure out what they're doing so I can go do the same things, you know.
Obviously, a lot of it comes with your stat. Not everybody can get away with it. I mean, that's plain and simple, right? I mean, the better player you are, the better chance you have to not have that be an issue with you at any point down the road with the franchise.
Absolutely. And
that's
if you,
just the facts
of the
matter.
If you do it one time, you better come back and be pretty doggone good.
Right. You better not do it and come back and have a drop off. All right, tell you what, let's take a break. We will come back with a longtime nemesis of the Jags, now their director of player development, Marcus Pollard. He was on The Amazing Race with his wife a few years ago. They've got a big coaching clinic coming up here with the Jags next week. We'll talk about that and his current role with this Jaguar organization. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
When you want to hear the Jaguars, just listen.
One step up the mountain. You want to get that championship, you got to keep climbing. Let's go, Jags on three. One, two, three. Jags.
The flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Everybody's happy these days. That includes Marcus Pollard, longtime foe of your Jacksonville Jaguars, now trying to help build a champion here as the director of player development and youth football as well. And he's sitting across from us right now in the studio. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, Marcus Pollard, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
How about this guy? We spent the last 5 minutes talking golf. We'll get into the Amazing Race. He's got a pretty good post-football career going right now, Dave.
Absolutely. And I was actually telling him earlier that Bahati Van Pelt was in his position before, was a great man, great guy for this team, for this city. Told him he had some big shoes to fill, but he already knows it. So that just tells you, but I can already tell that he's going to do just fine here.
I'll tie it all together for you. The first sports broadcast I ever did was a Flagler College basketball game. Bahati Van Pelt took a half-court shot at the buzzer that would have won the game. Missed it. He was a great player. Very
yes.
good, you know, good college player for the level he played at, and a good dude. So good shoes to fill, and we got a good guy to do it here. Tell us, Marcus, director of player development, what does that mean?
I like to call it a position of risk management. So I'm a risk manager, if you will. So some of the guys in the locker room that may have some issues, or some guys that may need leadership and direction, guidance counselor, I'm a fashion consultant. So all of these things come into play. And I think a lot of things that I have to offer the guys, I've experienced in my career. I think one of the things that helped me do what I do different than Van was that being a veteran of the league, I come in with instant credibility. So a lot of things that I may suggest to a guy, they're automatically going to do it anyway because I played. Dave, you know how it is. If you got a young guy that is willing to listen and you can give him direction about how he spends his money, where he shops his clothes, what friends he's hanging out with, you name it, I help him with it. And if you got a guy that'll listen because you're a vet and you played in the game, they're more likely to listen, buy in what you're talking about.
He's basically the guy's big brother, honestly, because they're going to come to him for everything. And it might be something that he actually doesn't have any idea about, but he's going to be the one that goes and finds it. Just like your big brother, you're going to come with all these questions, you know, big bro, what about this, you know, And so your big brother has to be able to find a way to help his little brother out. And so he just happens to have like 90 of them right now.
That's cool. And you know what? Unfortunately, the knucklehead factor gets the highlights and the headlines around the league. It doesn't seem to be very high here in Jacksonville with this current crop of players on this roster. And I was struck by something the way they talked about Blake Bortles after they picked him, Marcus. They said he was as clean a prospect as you could want, not only in terms of what he did on the football field and how he approached the game, but how he was off the field, what kind of guy he was, what kind of character he had. It seems like, and look, everyone can try to make character-based decisions, but you don't always hit a home run. It seems like they are making that part of the profile here. Do you get that sense?
Absolutely. I think Dave and Gus have done an outstanding job of picking character guys. Not only great football players, but people with great integrity. And if you can build a program with great players that can play, and then you don't have to worry about what they're doing off the field, and you know they're going to be on the field week in, week out without any of the issues. And Blake is a prime example of what kind of guy you want in our program. A guy that works hard, works his butt off every day at practice, is saying the right things. Not only saying the right things, but he's doing the right things. And it makes my job a lot easier. Like you mentioned already, Mike, those headlines are guys who are the knucklehead guys. And, you know, and what our Jack culture is, we want guys who love football and all about ball and take care of the problems off the field and not have
– Can you be ferocious as you need to be? I mean, it's a
absolutely
violent game,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. To me, you know, people talk about being a Christian. Can Christians be aggressive football players? Absolutely.
Yes.
I don't think just because you're a guy that has great character that you have to be a guy that's soft or people can push over. You can still be a dog, and David won. I was one. You can be a great guy and still be a dog on the football field.
I was just going to say, in church this past Sunday, our pastor talked about integrity. And integrity is basically your actions align with what you say and how you come across to people. And it's that way consistently all the time. So you can be a soldier. You can be a warrior. You can be a great football player. Still go attack because that's the game. You're not out there trying to maliciously hurt somebody to ruin their life. You're playing a game, a game that we've been blessed to be able to go out and play. So you go out and play it with all the passion and all the abilities that you have to be the best player possible. And so it's not about, I don't want to hit you so hard because I want to be nice. You know, I want to hit you because I want to get you down. I want to, you know, stop this drive, or I want to go score. So if I got to run you over, I got to run you over. That's just how it is.
Marcus, Tony Dungy had the rep as being maybe the nicest guy as far as coaches go. Gus, we feel Gus is a very nice guy. He's very, you know, fan friendly and all that stuff, and very energetic. But he's got to be able to have the ability to chew those guys when he needs to. He did it yesterday. Give us an example of Dungy, something that we might think, wow, that seems out of character, but you know better. Tell us, give us an example from the practice field.
I can remember one time, and Coach Donnie was a stickler for no fighting. If you can't do it in games, I don't want you doing it in practice. Well, these two guys, offensive line, defensive line, you know, always.
It's always those guys.
Always
getting in trouble.
Always in trouble. And so Tony was at the end of the field about 40 yards away. Like, hey, knock it off. And all of us were like, did he just yell? And that was it.
No cursing necessary with him, right?
No cursing at all. No cursing whatsoever. But to see raise his voice to a level where we had never heard it before. And guys were like, didn't never have to cuss. But because he raised his voice to a level where we never heard him at that level before, guys knew right away, okay, Tony mad right now. We better stop doing
that. Yeah, that's what Dave was saying earlier. You can't go to that well all the time or they're just going to tune you out eventually.
Yeah, they
will. So it has a bigger impact when it comes from a guy like that. A little more laid back.
Absolutely. And just like Gus yesterday, you know, he came out of character for me because he kind of got on the guys a little bit. Hey, Listen, this is not good enough. And for guys, it was like, oh, God, this is coming from Gus. And so to me, it made a huge impact on that guys. I said, okay, yesterday's practice, we need to take it to another level.
And you have to be a little bit more of the CEO when you're the head guy, too, right? You can't always be. Those assistant coaches can chew them out a little bit more frequently, I would think, than the head
Absolutely.
Guy.
Absolutely.
Guys will start getting comfortable. If you're always just, you know, if you let things go too many times, guys will think this is okay. But the one time you say, no, this is not okay, and you raise your voice or you just lose it, whatever it is, you're going to get their attention. And they're going to know, okay, you know what? This is not okay. We need to raise our level. The veterans will start getting into it, and they'll start getting the young guys into it. But you have to lose yourself one time.
Next week, is the Coaches Clinic for high school coaches. I think it's a pretty phenomenal resource. Basically, the entire staff of coaches here is involved in some way, shape, or form with different talks they're going to give, different philosophies they're going to talk about. Just explain to folks out there what's going on next Wednesday.
Yeah, I think because of Gus, who he wants to always connect with people. He's just this guy that's always, he never met a stranger. He's saying hello to everybody. And for him to take an opportunity to meet coaches and to be a coach and bring those two passions for him, meeting people and coaching together, it's a great opportunity for Gus. And I think Dave and Gus have decided, hey, let's just do this coaching clinic. It's an opportunity for us to connect with our following, be an opportunity for us to meet these folks and just talk philosophy, talk football, talk philosophy. Not so much about X's and O's, but I think that's how Gus is. Let's just get to know each other. Let's talk shop and just have a good time hanging out and fellowshipping.
Director of Player Development Marcus Pollard here with us. Part of what is being really stressed now in football is these coaches really from a youth level on up through the high schools, colleges, safety issues, right? The the head trauma, all that. How good of a job or still how much work needs to be done in this area?
I think there's a lot still work, but there's a lot of work to be done, but I think we're definitely taking the steps in the right direction. The league has this initiative where heads up football tackling. Well, we had the league set up this group aside from the NFL that's teaching people and coaches how to teach kids how to tackle, what's the signs of dehydration and strokes. They're doing all these initiatives to prevent some of the things that we're dealing with now. So if you can start at the Pop Warner level and start teaching these coaches the correct way to teach your kid how to tackle, so there's less neck injuries, there's less concussions. If you can start that now, and then in they're in junior high school, you're still teaching the same thing, and everybody's teaching the same professional way to tackle, lifting your arms, head up, those kinds of sit your butt down, those kinds of things that you get in the college or the high school level, we're missing it down there. And so we're starting at the bottom and working our way forward.
It's interesting to me because then I realize it's generational to some degree. You've got former players suing the league over the concussion issue and how much information they withheld from them potentially, allegedly. But yet when you see new rules being instituted and the fines that go with them because they're trying to get guys to adapt to a new way of playing that's safer, they run into seemingly nothing but resistance. I mean, how much you kind of have a foot in both worlds. You're a recent player, both of you guys. You can relate to the current guys. You can also see the management side, I would think. How much resistance is there in locker rooms on this entire issue? Or are guys starting to realize that, you know what, we need to be more aware of what's going to happen to us 30, 40 years down the line?
I think so. You're absolutely right. I think, you know, David and I, we both played, and I both agree that we play football because we love it. We knew what we were signing up for. We knew what we were getting into. But at the same time, we still need to know everything that's out there and available to us to help protect us and see what we're going to be like 30 years from today, because there's no crystal ball we can look in and tell how we're going to be. Hate to break up an unfortunate situation with Junior Seau. Who knew? But if we had more information, more knowledge about what could happen, I think guys make better decisions about what to do with their lives.
You played a lot of years, man, and didn't miss many games at all in that period of time. How you doing physically? How you feel?
Physically, I feel pretty good. My knees are beat up and shot, but other than
that seems to be the one thing that happens.
Inevitable
yes,
hazard of the
knees
job.
Knees are gonna just somehow, some way.
I mean, you came in '95, man, and you hung it up finally in 2008. That is that's quite an accomplished.
I think I had a little bit of help because I, you know, was a former basketball player. So where Dave was playing in college, I didn't have those years where I was getting beat up as well.
And I mean that was all the rage, and I think still continues to be. You see Jimmy Graham, who is arguably the best guy currently going, basketball player, Antonio Gates, yourself, Tony Gonzalez had the basketball background.
If I could do it, I would play basketball as long as I could, and then if, you know, I get done and I can't make it to the
just
NBA.
Just keep hitting the gym, work the body
I'm
out,
I'm
going
to transition into football because I've saved myself from getting beat up, and now I can just go roll and catch touchdowns.
See?
That would be awesome.
That may be the way to go. And, as well, Marcus saved enough that he could still finish top three in the Amazing Race. I'm told to ask you about the Speedo pictures. I've seen them.
Oh, wow.
See, y'all bringing up old stuff.
I didn't hear anything about this. Career. I just heard about a half-eaten cheeseburger found at the bottom of a trash can.
Give us just, I mean, we're going to have you back, and we got to talk nothing but Amazing Race sometime. But tell us the most extreme circumstance you found yourself in, and you do have to tell us what the genesis of that Speedo photo was.
The genesis of the Speedo photo was we were in Jean-Claude Van Damme, his hometown, and they're all about bodybuilding and fitness over there, and so we had to do this pose down. We had to learn this routine, But you had to be in a Speedo to do that.
Yeah. And by the way, you looked okay. I mean, I felt like, you know, I wouldn't do it,
that's
but you and Dave could get away with that.
That is going to show up in the locker room.
Oh, it already has.
It already has. That's a 2011.
In the team meeting.
In the team meeting. Embarrassed.
Love it.
I would have got up and been, hey, I look good, man. What do you like? Come on. Let's see these other coaches get up here. But for you, what, I mean, you know, we were told that you had the circumstance, you were so hungry that you basically ate a half-eaten hamburger. That I mean, what were some of the more extreme circumstances? Because Garrard said
he didn't. How did they not have a fast food place, you know, sponsoring these guys so they can run in real quick, grab their sandwich, and get out?
It was nothing like that. Nothing like that. We were at the Lube train station in Germany, I think. I forgot what we were named the train station, but we were there hanging out, and this couple was there eating McDonald's, and they left half-eaten cheeseburger. And I was hungry.
You looked at them, you eyeballed them, you're like, they don't
walk
sick.
If they don't run in the trash, I am about to pick this hamburger up and eat it.
And even if they do, if it's in the bag,
yeah, if it's
I might be able to deal with
it.
In my career, I saved this one. I'm good. I'm done. I'm going to finish in seventh
amazing
place.
Amazing race, I might not be able
on
to
on the amazing
it.
Race. All right, give fans coming out this week to go to OTA. It's just being around the organization, I ask everybody that sits in here with us as we wrap up with you, what sense do you get of the fan excitement for this franchise right now?
Unbelievable excitement in the community. No matter where I go, if I'm wearing a Jags t-shirt, hey, you for the Jags? Yeah, absolutely. You? Yeah, absolutely. And to have that kind of excitement surrounding this organization right now, they knows about it. You know, when you can get that many people to agree to one common goal to see the Jags have success and the fans get behind it, it's unbelievable. Our first rookie workout, and we had 6,000 people out on practice field. It's unheard of. Not even my popular days in Indy when we were outstanding did we have that many people at a practice.
Yeah, got to back it up with some wins now. What kind of year you expect out of Mercedes Lewis?
Oh, unbelievable talent. I told Mercedes the other day, he looks like he's in year 5. That guy looks amazing. He's running just like he did, you know, a few years ago. He's catching the ball. He's working out. He's doing all these different things. And really looking forward to what kind of year Mercedes is going to have
all
this year.
We're all looking forward.
Let me just say, when I was out there the last week with you guys, just looking at the field, all I could see was, man, Mercedes Lewis looks good. First of all, he's head and shoulders taller than everybody out there, but he just looks like a professional. He just looks like a beast out there, and I can't wait to see him get let loose.
Scored in each of the last 4 games last year,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
We can carry some of that
That's
over.
How we do with basketball players. You know, he was home basketball player, too.
Yeah, he was.
See,
yeah,
they're all the big guys are sticking together right there. Marcus Potter, good to see you, man. Nice to meet you, and look forward to getting you back. Hopefully some more embarrassing stories.
No more Speedo stories.
Trust me, I felt uncomfortable with the one, but we'll call it a day on that. Marcus Pollard, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. More of Jaguars today coming up, including this date in football history, next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history, indeed, is presented by the best fence company in Jacksonville. A whole lot of nothing happened on this date in football history. Well, we wouldn't lie to you and make something up. Sam Mills, a good NFL linebacker, was born on this date in 1959, which would make him, 55 years old, right? Yeah, I'm going to go with 55 years
Sounds
old.
Right.
I would have guessed younger, but I like to think of myself
younger
as
too.
Younger, right? I mean, doesn't that seem like Sam Mills would be younger than that, played with the Panthers and the Packers for quite a long time? That doesn't seem right, does it?
No.
I wonder if he was born in 69. This is the always accurate... The
Somebody help us with that math,
com. Fortunato chimes in with Donkey Kong debuting. He was wrong. He was off
I
by
quickly
24
corrected
hours.
Him. I told him it was it yesterday.
Debuted
Joe.
Yesterday. How many? What year, Joe? Did we find out what year it was? He gave up.
Today was the day that the original Star Trek TV show went off the air.
Is that right? What does any of this have to do with football? Well, nothing, frankly. But
sure
these are
some
things
of the
that
actors
happen.
Were football fans.
This is true.
See?
There you go. It went off the air after 3 brilliant seasons. All right, so there you go. This date in football history and other stuff, I believe is what it's called, is brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville. Their mission, to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while still providing unsurpassed customer service. You know, fencing is an investment in your home or business, and you're going to feel protected and breathe easier knowing that the best fence company installed your new fence. You can call Best Fence Company at 268-1638. You can get a professional free estimate at your convenience or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. Never gave out the question of the day. So we'll do that now. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. And this was submitted by a listener on Facebook who simply asked, which player on this football team, on the Jags football team, is most likely to make the Pro Bowl this year and why? So you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, and give us your thoughts there, or go to Facebook.com/Jaguars Today and weigh in there. I'd never met Marcus Pollard before. Seems like a really cool guy. Had a sampling of folks on Twitter, and it's understandable. Rooted against this guy for so darn long. Darn? I think it was kind of half between darn and damn. So darn long. And it's tough for me to accept that he's a member of the organization. You got a member of the Polian family who's a member of the organization. Marcus Pollard, far less hateful, I would think, than the Polian family. So, but he seemed like a good dude, Dave. And I think it probably is beneficial, as you pointed out, to have a guy who has played, and he can't just tell you, you know, kind of, this is how it should be. This is how it really is. And I think guys trust that. And he's young enough that they probably relate and say, hey, you know what, this guy probably has my best interest at heart.
Yeah, you know, that was the one thing that Van didn't have. He had not played in the NFL. He had played football. He played basketball. So he had a sports background. But he had been in the game for a long time. I think he was in Atlanta before he got here. So he had been in the NFL family for a long time. So guys still could come to him because he just had good knowledge of just about everything, basically. And so with Marcus, now he brings the background of, I've been there, done that. I've seen guys, maybe I've had my own issues where, you know, this was a mistake I did. Let me tell you, don't do that, but do this. And like I said, he is their big brother. They're going to come to him for everything. I'm trying to find a TV. What's a good TV that I should get, you know, for my money? Because not everybody comes in and everybody's making, you know, buku bucks. So he's got to help them with all those things. Maybe they need to rent a TV. Where can I go rent a TV? You know, so he's going to be asked all kinds of things. I'm dating this girl. What do you think about her? You know, the guys are getting on me in the locker room. She's sweet, that kind of stuff. You know, so he is a guidance counselor, big brother, whatever, all those things you want to call him. They're going to come to him for help, basically.
You look at a couple of things that impact his position. We talked about, you know, the concussion litigation that's going on, and, you know, players talk amongst themselves, and I find it hard to believe now that there's not enough knowledge of the dangers of the game, but it hasn't always necessarily been the case. And even though you may know, hey, I could get a concussion and I don't know if it's proven, it certainly hasn't been proven, but the contention is that the NFL knew a lot more, and their medical people knew a lot more about the cumulative effects of even mild concussions, and at least that those players should have had that available to them. I don't know if it would have changed the way they played the game or if they would have played the game, but you know, right now, for you, the big $765 million settlement deal, it covers every pass player, basically. Yet, you still have guys like Dan Marino going out, filing their own lawsuits, attaching their name to the game. How do you feel about that, the whole issue? I know it's complicated to just put it in a nutshell, but just what's your general take on what's going on?
Well, I'll say this. For me, I did not know as much of what could happen to you years down the road until all this stuff came out. Now, when I was a kid growing up, when I was in high school, in college, and then I got to the pros, they always warned you about concussions, you know, let us know if something ever happens. We may not keep you out of the game, but we at least want to know. We want to give you a chance to let your mind clear. Those kind of things. That's how I was brought up with concussions.
How do kids deal with that? Do you think they were honest, or you think kids were like, hey, I want to play, and you learn at an early age, if you keep your mouth shut, you're more likely to get on the field?
I don't think you were really a concern unless you were knocked out, unless you were stumbling around on the field. And even then, as long as your mind cleared, if you needed a few plays off,
right,
or a drive or two, then you would come back out there. That's just how it was. There was no, you miss a game the next week, that kind of stuff. If you have headaches, you know, you're going to have headaches, but you're still going to be out here, pretty much. There was no, we're keeping you away, up until, you know, this time when it became a big story. So, just, I would say 6 years ago, that's how it was. You know, and if you weren't knocked out, you were going to at least come back into the game, or you're going to try, and nobody would stop you. Back in the day, they just, on the field, gave him some smelling salt and said, all right, you know, keep going. Your eyes are open. How many fingers are I'm holding up? Just keep rolling. So they had even less to go off of back then.
You wonder, though, I mean, did those coaches, and that's the contention. I think that's what it boils down to. What did they know? What are the coaches who are waving the smelling salts and their superiors know about the dangers of putting that guy back in? And did they overlook them at all costs to get the W? Or was there some general sense of ignorance on the whole issue, including, you know, the coaches and the front office people in the National Football League?
You know, it's hard to speak to that far back, so I don't know what they were going through. I just know what I would always see watching games. You know, you'd see somebody put some smelling salt in their face, and here they woke up.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And then you'll see them, you know, two plays later, they're back on the field. So I think the league had an idea, but I think everybody, it was just so new for everybody. Just like if you go far enough back, they wouldn't give you water because they thought that made you weak.
Right.
I mean, so there's studies, you know, water helps you survive.
Water good,
yeah. You know, but they still wouldn't do it because that makes you weak. You need to be able to go out there and here's a salt pellet. You know, so they're drying you up and not giving you water to help you replenish it. So there's a lot of things that we've come a good ways from. I think the concussions and the brain trauma and injuries are that next step where we're coming to. Because I told you, I'm still a young man. So for my knowledge of So for my knowledge of concussions is unless you're knocked out, you're going to get back in the game. You know, unless you're knocked out, they're going to keep you out if you get knocked out. But if you're just dinged, is what we called it, then you're okay.
And more recently, obviously, you've been in an NFL locker room as a player than Marcus Pollard, but just by a few years.
Yes.
The opinions of players in terms of the safety rules that are being instituted, the fines and everything that comes with it, are they justified at times in thinking the league is going too far, or is the NFL just reasonably reacting to, you know, okay, you're going to sue us over all these things. Now we're going to take this to extreme, and we're going to protect you, but at the same time, we're really protecting ourselves, and you can't now accuse us of not going far enough.
I think that works both ways, honestly. I can tell you when all that stuff first started and they were throwing flags for hits that weren't even to the head, but they were close, I was so mad because I'm like, you're taking away the game. You're taking away, you know, those big vicious hits and all that kind of stuff. That was when it first started. That's because I had no knowledge or not as much knowledge of concussions and what they can do to you. Now I think it's great. I think, you know, if you make a clean tackle, get the guy to the ground, there's not really the necessity to blow a guy up in the head, you know, because guys will always tell you they'd rather get hit in the head than in the knees.
Right.
Well, I'd rather just get hit in the chest or the stomach.
Right.
You know?
It's not an either or necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yes, they may be covering their butt to say, hey, we're fining for all these things. We're lowering the target, all that kind of stuff. Great. Save your butt, but you're also going to save my life and save some of my buddies' lives down the road from having all these head issues or, you know, having, you know, thoughts of committing suicide because maybe their mind isn't right from all these shots. So save your money, please. I don't care because that ultimately is going to help save my life.
I want to talk more about this with you at a later date, but coming up next, we're going to hear some of Fat Tony's interviews, including Toby Gerhart yesterday in the Jaguar locker room. Also, Josh Evans on the mend now, bone spur surgery, had some bone spurs removed from his right foot. And he'll be on the shelf till around training camp. So Tony got a chance to catch up with those guys. That's coming up next. David Garrard in studio. We're live at Everbank Field as we are every day. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Let's go!
It's always football season.
You gotta love this, don't you?
On Jacksonville's football station.
It's a man game! It's a man game! It's so good! You better get
it! 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, you can weigh in. This gets Tony excited every time he hears a little Marshall Mathers.
I love me some Eminem.
You can weigh in on the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day. Repeat that back three times fast, and you may win a T-shirt just for that. But the question today is, which Jaguar most likely to go to the Pro Bowl in 2015? Obviously, following this upcoming season, we'll discuss our thoughts on that. And maybe one of your candidates will be the guy who's expected to get 300-plus touches out of the backfield, Toby Gerhart. Tony, before we hear this interview, we've had Toby on before. Just your impressions of Toby, what he's all about, what he's like.
He's a confident guy, and I think he strikes me as a guy, the first time we got to sit down with him in yesterday, that's very excited to finally be out of the shadow of somebody else. And really, it's almost like he had a four-year training ground on how to be an NFL running back. The time that he spent in pass protection and third down as a receiver, I think can really pay dividends for that guy going forward.
You know, Dave, what it's like to wait your turn. Toby's getting that opportunity right now, and he's probably just can't wait. And especially for a guy like him, big part of his game is physicality. OTA is not going to show what Toby Gerhart's all about.
It's not. And he just wants to be a featured back. He wants to be the back that the team is counting on to make those big plays, to get the first downs, to get those tough yards. And, you know, if he's a guy that can come out of the backfield and also catch the ball as well, then he'll be on the field, you know, quite often. But the best part is he'll be on the field on goal line situations, you know, so he'll be able to get in the end zone.
That's and, how you get the love when you, when you cross the stripe.
Even if somebody carried the ball all the way down to that 2-yard line and you get in and get that touchdown, man, your name is getting talked about the whole
no
time.
No doubt about it. Here's Fat Tony with Toby Gerhart.
Here with Toby Gerhart, and how do you feel like you're adjusting your first week and a half here with the team in practice in OTAs?
Yeah, I think I'm adjusting well. You know, first was the heat last week. Was a rude awakening for me. It's probably that first practice we had after Memorial Day weekend was probably the hottest practice I've been in a long time. But, yeah, adjusted well, picking up the offense. I'm out here running around and trying to perform well and gain the respect of my teammates.
I know today in practice, Gus Bradley pulled everybody aside and kind of gave you guys a little bit of lip service about what was going on today. What was that about?
Yeah, you know, the tempo of practice was down. It wasn't crisp, and he felt like guys weren't out there pushing themselves and striving to get better. And, you know, all along, that's his whole message, is to get better and to push ourselves. And he felt we weren't doing that and needed to be addressed. And I think as a result, you know, guys started pushing themselves more in practice. Second half of practice was much better.
For you, having been behind Adrian Peterson for those years up there in Minnesota, do you feel like you're ready to take on the load, you know, 300, 350 carries a season?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely ready. And, you know, this offseason, I'm out here trying to get better and get ready for that type of load. I've got to learn from the best for the last 4 years, and you know, now I'm ready for that chance to step up and be a guy for this team.
And what kind of things do you learn playing behind a guy like Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, you know, just some of the, I mean, obviously there's some things he does out there that no one can emulate, but for me, just the way he's carried himself, you know, how he works in the offseason, how he handles meetings and practice, and then just picking his brain, you know, when he's on the field, you know, I was his eyes, he'd come off and ask me, and then when I'm on the field, I come off and ask him what I should have done better. And that relationship, I think, has made us both better and, you know, helped me leaps and bounds moving forward.
And taking on the role not only as a lead back, but as a leader in the backfield for this team. Chad Henne, obviously experienced in this offense. Your first year here, but you have a bunch of other young running backs on this team. As kind of the elder statesman of the running back, does that put more pressure on you, do you feel like?
Yeah, a little bit more pressure. You know, it's weird because coming from Minnesota where Adrian was the guy and he was the old guy in the room, now I'm the old guy in the room and one of the older guys in the locker room. Guys are going to look to me to do things the right way. They're going to look to see how I take that first rep, what tempo I go at, and, you know, to be a leader and show the younger guys how it should be done. And, you know, I'm ready for that role, and you're going to lead as best as I can.
This offense, obviously, you have to be able to pick up the blitzes, the blocks, that kind of stuff. And they also ask the running backs to be receivers in this for this team as well. Do you feel comfortable in that role, running but also receiving?
Yeah, definitely. I think over the last 4 years, that was more my role in Minnesota, was third downs, picking up blitz, getting out of the backfield and check downs, catching the ball, and getting upfield. And, you know, I'm comfortable with that. And, excited to play in this offense where the ball spread around, not only running it, but in the pass game.
So you feel like that may have helped you? Like, not only playing behind Adrian Peterson, but the role that you had before you had to develop into, you know, that every down starter in the NFL?
Yeah, I think it has. You know, coming from college, you know, I carried the ball 20, 25 times a game. And then the last 4 years in Minnesota, it was a different role. It was spilling Adrian, but then third downs, picking up blitzes, running the two-minute drill, stuff like that. And I think that's helped me, you know, recognize defenses, understand pressures and how where they're going to come from, and then also getting out and catching the ball.
Was it frustrating for you at all that time in Minnesota as a guy who did carry the ball as much as you did at Stanford, a Heisman Trophy candidate, and then you go up there, obviously you're behind one of the greatest, but to not get the ball as much as you wanted to, was that frustrating at all?
Yeah, it was definitely frustrating at first, you know, coming, like you said, from college my rookie year, coming out and getting, you know, 2-3 carries a game was something completely different. But over time, you know, I learned my role and what was asked of me and what I needed to do to help the team. And like I said, that was third downs. If Adrian was tired, come in and not have a drop-off. And over the years, you know, I embraced that role and felt like I did a pretty good job in that role. And it was something that, you know, I got used to and something that I took pride in and helped the team, you know, any way possible.
Have you ever had any nicknames, anything like that from fans, teammates, or?
No, not really. No, not really.
I asked, but we got a guy that tweets the show constantly for Jaguars Today. He tells us all the time he wants your nickname to be Bone Crusher. How would you feel about Bone Crusher?
Bone Crusher, huh? Interesting. We'll see how it plays forward. You know, we'll see what happens.
All right. And as far as away from the field, what kind of stuff are you into?
Yeah, you know, I love the outdoors. I love to get outside. I love to fish, be on the water. My wife and I have been on the beach a lot, just enjoying Florida and getting outside.
Have you had a chance to get fishing since you got down here? I know it's been pretty hectic since you got to Jacksonville.
Yeah, I've only gone one time, just in the intercoastal. I caught like two little trout and that I could keep, but that was about it. Excited to get out there more here shortly.
Well, outside of the nicknames, 10 seconds just to talk to the fans here of the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, and been told, you know, the fans are great here. Excited to interact with the fans and give them something to cheer about.
Seemed pretty noncommittal on Bone Crusher.
Yeah,
though.
He was just kind of laughed.
Yeah,
I think he liked that.
I got to tell you right now, if I was a running back his size and someone said, "I want to nickname you Bone Crusher," I'd be like, "Hell yeah, dude!
Yeah,
let's roll, buddy."
I mean, yeah, Bone Crusher's great. I think they have an issue putting the nickname on themselves though, saying, "Yeah, I'm going to call myself Bone Crusher Beer Truck over here." So that
it wasn't self-appointed.
That's right. He earned that one, and he rolled with that one to great effect. All right. Also, Josh Evans. As we talked about, going to be behind, obviously, Winston Guy's getting a lot of valuable reps out there, as are others, as Josh Evans rehabs his surgery to remove bone spurs from his foot. Tony had a chance to catch up with the former Gator safety.
Hey, with Josh Evans, man, how you feeling? I know you went in for surgery last week. How's the foot?
It's feeling pretty good, man. I'm actually happy that it's recovering pretty fast and excited to get back out there.
When do you expect to be able to get back out there on the field?
I probably won't be participating in any OTAs or minicamp, but hopefully soon I'll be able to start jogging around and doing probably a little bit of positional work.
And for you, you know, being out there, obviously you can't participate in OTAs here for the next couple weeks, but what do you do? I know you were out there on the field while they were going through their drills and their practice today. What are you doing? Is it just mental reps?
Man, there's a lot of mental reps and a lot of film work. You know, I break down a lot of film, kind of go back and watch what I did last year, and then coming in, you know, being a little more mature and, you know, I'm glad to get that rookie season out the way and really work on my craft and become a professional.
Frustrated, you know, the foot injury, as you come in, you're competing with Winston Guy probably for a starting spot there, free safety. Frustrating at all for you to not be able to be out there right now?
I mean, it's a little bit of frustrating, you know, whenever you can't do something you love. But as far as, you know, coming out there and competing, I mean, that's just football. That's life, and that's what makes this game beautiful. So, you know, knowing that I'd be back for camp is a blessing to get back out there and compete.
And take us back to last year. You know, your rookie year, right now, obviously, you're not on the field, but you feel like your head is spinning a little bit less than it was at this point last year?
Absolutely. I mean, everything, you know, last year came like a storm. You're young, and you kind of put out there real fast, and you're forced to grow up real fast. So it benefited me a lot as far as, you know, growing up and maturing fast enough and hanging around guys like Pudge, showing me certain things of how to become a professional. Now, you know, kind of slow the game down a little bit and factor in what you know can do better, like I said, and I always go back and see what I did last year and how could I critique it to be better than I was last year.
Really young, especially in the secondary for this Jaguar team. Alan Ball, actually the elder statesman for you guys. How much was did his presence help as he's going into his seventh year? Sip, obviously, his rookie year. Grotz, his rookie year. Mm-hmm. All these very young guys. How much did that help last year?
It helped a lot because you got a mixture of both. You know what I mean? You got a little bit of people that have been in the league for a little bit. And then you got the young guys like us who's trying to feed off them and see, you know, if they got any nuggets for us to learn from. So it's always a blessing to have a veteran guy in the locker room to give his experience and let it rub off on the younger players.
And how comfortable are you in the defense with what you're being asked to do?
I'm very comfortable. Like I said, I was blessed to have Dan Quinn, who's now the defensive coordinator at Seattle, which is a very similar scheme here. So I happen to be put in a very fortunate situation for me to come here and adapt real quick.
And as far as away from the field, you know, what kind of things do you enjoy doing outside of football?
Outside of football, man, I like to just, you know, relax. I like to watch shows.
And, what are you into? What shows?
Well, right now I've been watching Dexter. That's been the show.
Okay, you're catching up.
Catching up a little bit on Dexter. But, yeah, man, I like to get off my feet and, you know, whenever I'm not, you know, breaking down any film, just kick my feet up, watch shows, you know, learn how to cook, do little stuff around the house and, you know, relax, man. That's key.
What do you feel like the big lessons were for you? Was there a wake-up moment, like welcome to the NFL type play or moment for you last year? What happened?
Yes, my first game, Seattle. Dwight Lowry went down, and it was like first quarter, and I was put in real fast. And I remember it was deep middle. It was a rollout play, and he threw it up. This is my first big play. Like, oh, I'm about to catch an interception. I went to go jump up, but I didn't attack the ball. And, you know, Sidney Rice came and scored a touchdown. And that was like my wake-up call to stop getting caught up in a moment thinking this play coming to you and to go up and attack the ball. So ever since then, I knew to be like, okay, now I got to go after it instead of thinking it's coming to me.
And people always talk about the speed of the game in the NFL being the big difference between college and what happens up here. Was that your experience too? Was it really just about how fast everything goes?
Yeah, I mean, the speed is definitely different. You know, it helps coming from the SEC because you're with a lot of, you know, fast guys. But the game is faster as well. So, you know, being around those type of people, it forces you to pick up stuff real quick because every step is critical in this league, whereas in college you can kind of be back a step and make up for it. This league, you one step away from a touchdown. So it's real critical to that point to, you know, make sure you're on top of your game.
And 4-8 last year, mm-hmm. Talking about your Gators. Getting any crap from, I know Mike Harris is in the secondary with you, Telvin Smith, they drafted this year, those Florida State guys, they giving you a hard time?
Nah, they haven't really said much. I mean, me and Mike used to joke around about it last year and say little things, but, you know, I'm excited to see them boys get out there and compete this year. As you can see, I'm excited to see the young guy, Vernon Hargraves, who's a pretty good cornerback, looks like he's going to have a good season. And, you know, they had a lot of injuries last year. Coach Will Muschamp is a great coach, and I know he'll do the right thing for this team.
And just 10 seconds here talking to the fans of Jacksonville. What do you want to say?
Oh, man, I appreciate all the love and support, you know, on the media, social networking and everything. People have been tweeting me saying, you know, we hope your foot coming along. And it's just been love, man. Ever since day one, since I've been here, it's been respectful. But, you know, the city, the town, the Duval, and Jacksonville alone, man, this is a great place to be.
It's all love, Tony.
All love.
It's all love. Big hug from Josh Evans, all the Jaguar fans reaching out to him via the social media. By the way, if you miss anything, you think, what did that guy just say? Good chance that Big Cat Country just tweeted exactly what they said. They do a great job really live tweeting a lot of the interviews that we have.
They
so,
do.
We appreciate those
We
guys.
Certainly do. And if you miss that, then you can catch it archived either at 1010XL or Jaguars.com a little bit later today.
How about that? You can go to 1010XL.com in the on-demand section. You can replay either hour of the show each day. Or if you just want to hear a particular interview, we usually separate those out as well. And Jaguars.com in their media gallery has downloadable podcasts generally by mid-afternoon of each day's show. So good stuff there. We appreciate that. Thanks to Josh Evans and Toby Gerhardt spending some time with our own Fat Tony. We will come back. We'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking Jag fans today, which member of your football team is most likely to head to the Pro Bowl next February, January, whatever month it's going to. I'm going to go with February, next early February in Honolulu. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Paul Pazluzny, and you're listening to the best Jaguars coverage in Jacksonville on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
There you go. Oh, Garrard.
Love it.
Can we get some video? Can we get a webcam, please?
Hey.
long overdue, the webcam. Now we know it gets them moving in here.
Love me some Earthly Fire.
Jaguars I'm today, you, live at Everbank here, and spinning the hits, Miss Lauren Brooks, who's going to join us Thursday, Tony.
Oh, she's taking my spot.
She's going to jump in your chair. Yeah. She's going to take the day off from producing and come down here because they have the OTAs open to the public, opening at 10:50 to 12:50. So we're going to miss a good portion of it, but we will enjoy the company of Lauren Brooks. I think Richard Miller is going to stop by. You can catch a Richard Miller show, in fact, tonight on 1010XL and every Tuesday night. And they'll join us on Thursday, among others, as we get you ready for open practice. It'll be interesting to see. Thursday's going to be a lot tougher, I think. You know, it's not the same as Friday, obviously. It's a day earlier. I don't know what the turnout's going to be, but I'm sure that whoever comes out will be enthused for it. But remember, go to Jaguars.com and register. It doesn't cost you anything to register, but as you saw, they had a line for people who needed tickets, and they had a line for people who had pre-registered, and the pre-registered line was much shorter and faster moving. So if you want to get in, the easy way to do it, just please go ahead of time and print out a little registration ticket at Jaguars.com. Not that difficult.
You couldn't find a better person to fill my spot on Thursday, by
the way. Than Lauren Brooks.
Yes.
Aw,
the room
thank
is going
to
look a whole lot better, too. So
I don't know if I look as good in a tank top as you
that's
do.
That's a low bar. That's a low bar. By the way, yeah, the photos are out there. Check out Tony's timeline at 1010XL Fat Tony and mine as well. David Garrard wanted to take a break. Didn't want to be typecast, Tony, as a superhero. And he came in with the incandescent lime green shirt
came
today.
Came in with the blinders.
And the shoes that match. That's the thing.
You got to
really,
coordinate.
The full effect.
You got to coordinate.
You've got the teal. I would call those teal shorts. And the teal shoes with the neon, like, yellow / green sneaks.
You we haven't seen those.
You couldn't miss me.
No, you absolutely couldn't with the black socks as well. So,
yeah, I'd be bad in hide and seek.
What is that? Yeah. You never went the nerd glasses route, did you?
I actually did buy a pair. But it is so hard for me to pull it off, though.
Did you? So what was it like? A decision at home? You'd check yourself out in the mirror. Mary, how do I look? Yeah. Is this going to play?
They were Oakleys, and it was everybody was doing it. So I said, let me grab a pair. Just, you know, let me follow right in line with everybody else.
Sure.
And I get so tired of those things being on my face because I don't need them.
Right.
And they're not blocking the sun. So it's like, what is the point again that I'm wearing these glasses?
That's what we've all been asking. But hey, you know what? I guess I'm just the angry old man of the.
You know, Garrard can pull off the Panama hat.
Oh, he can pull off the hat.
I love the hat.
No question. And I heard, you know, Marcus Pollard say, I'm a fashion consultant to these guys. And I'm thinking, not to him.
Yeah.
He's his own man over here in that regard. All right, let's go around the table here. The Tom Butch Family of Dealerships fan feedback. Question of the day. Let me ask you guys first. Jaguar most likely to make the Pro Bowl in 2015, which, by the way, as soon as I said it, I questioned Honolulu. Wait a minute. No, it's going to be in Phoenix or in Glendale, where the Super Bowl is being played a week before the Super Bowl next year. But who's most likely to make it?
Well, the fact that it's in the States, I'm going to say, is great, because the one that I was in Miami, I thought, this is awesome. I get to have all my friends and family, some that don't want to fly, can drive down to the game. So I think it's great. Change it up, put it in a lot of different cities, warm climate.
And that's a different perspective than you hear from a lot of players are like, hey, I want to go to Honolulu. Maybe they're the young single guys that want to go to Honolulu.
Yeah, exactly. And they're getting there for free. You know, they might be flying out a couple of family members, but what about your friends? What about people that can't fly or, you know, don't like to fly? They can just drive, you know, if it's somewhere in the States, and then more of your fans can drive in, can fly in too, as opposed to Honolulu.
All right, so who do you like?
I just have a couple guys that I think have a chance.
Okay.
So I'm gonna start with the young pup, Joko. I think this is gonna be a good year for him to bounce back from his injury. I think he learned a lot while he was playing last year, so I think he's got a good shot to make it. I got to give my guy Mercedes Lewis. I mean, like I said, when I was out of practice, I thought, man, this guy is a monster. He's always been a monster, and he works at it. He knows what he's doing. Great person, great vet, great player. So I think he's going to have a great year, a Pro Bowl year this year. Plus Lesney, Once again, just a guy that is just consistent. You know, he's going to give you 100 or so tackles. He's going to be that guy that you can always count on defense. So I think this is another year for him. I know he went in last year, but this is a year I think he's also going to do it. Cyprian.
Yeah, you got
Cyprian.
It.
Okay. You guys looked at me weird.
So. No, I'm waiting for your thoughts.
A young guy that I didn't know much about before he got here, and I just heard his name quite often. I got to see him play a little bit last year. I think this would be a breakout year for him. I think it usually takes you 1 year to have a breakout year, and then you go in the following year if you have another good year. But I think he's going to play so well, and his name was said so much that he's going to have a good year this year to make the Pro Bowl. And then one more guy, look Clemens. I think he's going to also show his his vetness and come out, have a productive year, help this team really excel at the D line, get a bunch of sacks. That's what we need. We need some sacks around here.
We do need that. Yeah. We've got five candidates now, Tony.
Yeah. So just a couple guys.
Dave's got it covered if any of those guys make the Pro Bowl.
I'm throwing a wide net out there. You know, if you're fishing, you want to have a big wide net so that you can
Tony, for you, who is it?
Yeah, I'll give you one on offense, one on defense. I'll agree on Puzlesny because the Pro Bowl, especially at positions like linebacker, tends to be a once your name's in the hopper, it stays in the hopper type thing, which is why I think it would be tough for a guy like Luke Jokel. It's just if he gets to a point where everyone's recognizing him as one of the best left tackles in football, then he gets his name to that point. I'm not sure that can happen for him this year. But there are exceptions to that, and that's because of fantasy football. And because there aren't a whole lot of dominant running backs in the AFC, you have Jamaal Charles and then what? There's a bunch of teams that are doing it by committee, maybe Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh, but Ray Rice has fallen off. If Gerhardt had a monster year, and we certainly think that he's going to get 300, 350 carries, but if he's a double-digit touchdown guy, 1,400 yards this year, I think he's somebody that will get the attention of people because of the position he plays. So I think Gerhardt's the most likely, given the situation of running back in the AFC.
All right, I think it's a decent selection. Lauren Brooks, who do you have at the top of your list?
Well, I had one of the same ones that DG9 had. I had Chris Clemens. The ACL that he suffered was really his first major injury, so I don't think that's going to prevent him from having another good sack year. And even though he's my age, we are about the same age, he's 32, I think he is going to have just a great year, and he's fast. He ran a 4.68 in the 40, so I'm expecting, like David said, a lot of sacks this year.
All right, there you go, Chris Clemens.
They need bigger nets. You guys' nets are not big enough.
We were told to choose one.
Which person is Tony took offense defense. I think Tony makes a good case for Toby Gerhardt. I do think there is something to the recognizability factor. If you've been there, done that, therefore Zane Beatles. I think if the Jags were to significantly improve statistically in the running game this year, I think people would say, well, why is that? And they may overlook the fact that really Jokel didn't play much last year. They'll say, well, they added Zane Beatles. He's the most prominent name that they added. But I think Mercedes might be that guy, Dave, because the way he ended the year with Chad Henne, he kept finding him in the red zone, and a return to double-digit touchdowns. Now, clearly, Julius Thomas and Jordan Cameron are a couple of guys you're going to have to keep your eye on. Well, we don't know about Gronk.
Right.
I mean, and if Gronk's healthy, you can almost pencil him in, but the question is, will he be healthy? He's had so many injuries coming off now, the torn ACL. Don't even know if he's going to be ready for training camp, and can he stay healthy? But I think you can get his name into the conversation.
I was going to say once you guys finish that I would give it to, if I had to give it to one person, I would give it to Mercedes because he has the name, he has the ability, because he not only just catches touchdowns, but he's great in the run game. So that goes a long ways, maybe not to the fans, but when the coaches and the players and all those guys are voting, they're going to be voting for that kind of reason. And like you said, he finished the year strong. I believe Chad realized what he has now. He's got some young guys on the outside. So he's going to have to rely on Mercedes, especially when you get into the red zone.
Yeah, and I think if I had to bet money, I might bet Puz just because he went last year. And it is there's some amount of inertia that comes with the voting process for fans. In there, been there, done that.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to count on the ball. You know, Mercedes has to count on somebody getting him the ball.
Right.
Where Poles just comes downhill and knock guys out.
All right, so I'll take the offense, the defense, and special teams, and we'll cover it from there. I'll take the 90.
I didn't mention anger. I also
And now you got the whole thing covered. Tony, couple of votes off Twitter. What did we see today?
Let me get back to those here in just a moment. But we saw a bunch of different guys mentioned, including Brian Anger a lot. I think people still are kind of having fun at the Jaguars' expense a little bit with that third-round pick. But here's a few we got. Sean said Toby Gerhart wants to prove he can be the guy with not being behind AP, but now being the feature back. Hashtag Jaguars today. You only get red now if you include the hashtag. I will not read it anymore.
Nice.
If it does not. Homebrew Fool Boy said Brian Anger will fully realize weapon status and become the most dominant punter in football. Woo! Hashtag Jaguars today. S. Carson Howell mentioned Beatles. He's been there before, and I think he's the best lineman on an improving O-line. Hashtag Jaguars today. Our good friend Richard Cranium sent in just grumpy, I guess, but Brian Anger, he is a weapon after all. Hashtag in Gene we trust. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag snarky much.
Well, I love the snark. That's all good. Here's a few off the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Keeping with what you did, only with the hashtags. John Duraskovich said, who, by the way, suggested the question today. So thank you, John, for that. You can certainly tweet or post questions you'd like to hear us use in future episodes. He said Anger in either Grotz or Sip. He said Anger will be the best in the league with an improved pass rush. I think our second-year DBs will start to dominate through the hashtag in there. T-Dub Power Moves White said I'd say Sip because he's the next best safety since Donovan Darius. David Phillips went with Mercedes Lewis. He's healthy with an upgraded receiving core around him and a new offensive line that allow him to catch more passes instead of being used as just another lineman himself. And a couple more for Cyprian in there. And then Josh Long went Zane Beatles. Great fit in the zone blocking scheme. Hashtag Jaguars today.
I love how you have to read everything that is typed on there, including all the hashtags. If I was a fan, I would just write some of the funniest hashtags along with my little comment so I can hear
you
guys.
We have the right to censor them if we choose to. They might slip past the goalie on occasion, but throw some hashtags in there. We'll read them. We don't care. All right.
I'm trying to get a name on the news.
The Tom Bush family
hashtag,
of dealerships.
Hashtag.
The Tom Bush family of dealerships includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini. They present the fan feedback spotlight. You can visit TomBush.com for more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle and follow them on Twitter @TomBushMotors. Hashtag awesome.